Boston fans, this is what you've been waiting for.
Thomas, in the paint, tries to spin it up and down.
It's Celtics coverage on CLNSradio.com.
Into Crowder, takes it. Got it. 8 tenths of a second to go.
So what are you waiting for? Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll free, 347-215-7771.
Put up it in! Marcus Smart at the buzzer!
And welcome into the CLNS Radio Celtics postgame show. My name is Jess Thomas. I'm the host of the show here. I got Mike Munger alongside. He'll be joining in just a minute. And we'll be breaking down a Boston Celtics 111-78 victory over the Washington Wizards at the Garden here on Friday night on Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving. And it was a rout from the beginning. The Celtics were up big in the first quarter, and they took it all the way to the end, and they won 111-78 was your final. Big game from numerous guys. We'll get to that. But first, I want to remind you that this episode of the CLNS Radio Celtics postgame show is brought to you by lynda.com, the online learning platform with over 3,000 on-demand video courses to help you strengthen your business, technology, and creative skills. For a free trial, visit lynda.com/CLNS. That's lynda.com/CLNS. You can follow the conversation at our social media links, www.facebook.com/CLNSstands. And the Twitter handle for this show specifically is at CLNS Celts PG Show, where you can follow the Celtics postgame show. Once again, I am Jess Thomas, joined by Mike Munger. It'll be the first show we're doing together, so let's get it going. Mike is now live. Mike, how are you doing tonight?
Going on, man. What a game, huh?
No kidding. They ran away with them at the start, 29-18 first quarter. And unlike most games this season, Mike, where they've gotten up early, they extended the lead in every single quarter, outscoring the Wizards by 11 in the first, 7 in the second, 5 in the third, and 12 in the fourth, which has not happened frequently.
Well, it's just funny because for some reason the Celtics are a terrible matchup for the Wizards. Both games this year they've been non-competitive, and for one I like it. I think Bradley Beal is a good player. He's a good shooting guard, but for some reason this team just rubbed me the wrong way. It's not a hatred. It's just kind of like an annoyance with this team because I think that their backcourt gets a little bit more credit than they deserve just because, they're both explosive offensive players. But I like it. The best thing that I like seeing tonight was that Avery Bradley, whichever one of their guards was on, was completely intimidated. Neither one of them wanted the ball when Avery Bradley was on them. John Wall looked lost when Avery Bradley was on him. Bradley Beal, I think the only baskets he actually got were either when Bradley was on Wall or when he was running off three picks and you had Gortat setting a pick on Avery Bradley. It was fun for me to watch. I like seeing I think it's pretty evident to anybody that watches that Paul Pierce was kind of like the heart and the glue for this team. And without that veteran leadership, this team doesn't know which way is up. So I like it. I like seeing the Celtics respond the second game in a row. They kind of lost their way a little bit, a couple games. But I like seeing them respond with a nice, huge bounce-back win tonight and not have to worry about playing certain guys so many minutes.
I love what you said about Paul Pierce being the glue because it is funny. Their team really is pretty much the same as it was last year, minus Paul Pierce, and they just look completely different. They're 6-7 right now, and the Celtics improved to 9-7 with this victory. So the Wizards aren't even close to one of the best teams in the East now. They're struggling, and same team minus Paul. So huge. Huge veteran leadership. I like what you say there. And also, big win going on a 5-game road trip after this, which we'll get to a little bit later in the show, breaking that down. But last game at home for a while and a really good one to have at home. And against Washington, a 111-75 victory here a couple weeks ago when these two teams played. 3 weeks ago from tonight, the Celtics beat the Wizards 118-98 and had one of their best games of the season. So maybe quite possibly there's two best games, definitely two of the top four games against the same team. And it's just, I don't know if it's an attitude problem, I don't know if it's a personnel problem, but really I want to get into it just because since you brought up Wall and Beal having so much trouble against Bradley, that was actually one of my topics, and let's just jump into that first. Just between them, they had 26 points combined. Beal had 16 points, 7 of 14 shooting, 4 turnovers. Wall had 10 points, 4 of 11 from the field, 3 turnovers. So they had 7 turnovers combined. Wall had a poor shooting game, just really was not very involved with the game. And on the other side, Isaiah Thomas and Avery Bradley had 37 points combined, 21 for Thomas, 16 for Bradley. Both shot pretty well. And going into the game, most people would say, oh yeah, the Wizards' backcourt's better. They have Beal and Wall. Like, those are two of the better players in the league. Celtics completely dominated. What is wrong with their backcourt?
For some reason tonight, they look disinterested. It's just John Wall, he is completely regressed. I think Tommy and Mike were talking about it during the broadcast, where over the last few weeks, John Wall has been averaging about 5 turnovers per game. He had 3 tonight, and if you're supposed to be one of the elite top 4 or 5 point guards in the NBA, you can't go through a stretch like that where you're turning the ball over at such an alarming rate. He wasn't aggressive. He already has a suspect jump shot as it is, so if he's not getting to the rim and getting to the free throw line, and if he's turning the ball over like that, what is he doing out there? With regards to Bradley Beal, you look at it, 7 for 14, 16 points. It's not the worst stat line, but you're talking about a guy who probably could and should 23, 24 points per game. And, again, I love gloating about Avery Bradley. He's my favorite Celtic. This guy just shut him down. It was great just watching him get up in there, play that Tony Allen-esque style defense where – you're just up underneath them. Anytime you put the ball on the floor, it was pretty much a steal. There was a bunch of them out on the perimeter. Anytime Bradley Beal even thought he had a chance to do anything with the ball, Avery Bradley was up right up in his cheeks, and it was just fun. Like, watching Avery Bradley play defense is just as much fun as watching him, shoot a wide open jump shot with the pretty stroke that he has. So I just think it was a combination of Bradley's defense, Isaiah Thomas getting to a rhythm, not being intimidated by the guards on the other side. And I don't know, I just think they came to play. We came to play and they didn't.
Yeah, I love what you said about Wall regressing, because he's just not been effective. And I was saying during the game, the public kept leaving him wide open, and it didn't matter because he can't shoot. He's a poor jump shooter, always has been. His strength is driving the basket, which he really didn't do much of. And yeah, the turnovers are just brutal. A lot of turnovers in the last several games. Only 3 tonight, but it seemed like he had more. He was just a lot of sloppy play. And at this point, I don't want to jump the gun, and I tend to do that sometimes. Beal seems to be a better player right now than Wall. He's played better all season long. He's a solid shooter, very good shooter. He definitely changes the game more. And when he's on his game like tonight, but not able to get into much of a rhythm because of Bradley's defense, he needs someone like Wall to be there to pick up the slack. And Wall was absolutely 100% not there. So I think great job by the Celtics of shutting them down. And if those guys aren't hitting and not playing well, Washington's going to be in some deep trouble. So definitely something to watch out for them. We're going to open the FanDuel toll-free call lines in about 10-15 minutes. Our call lines are brought to you by FanDuel. So make sure you head over to FanDuel.com. It's the best place to play one-day fantasy basketball. You pick a team of 9 players with just players from that night's game, and you can get payouts in your account by the next morning. You don't have to wait to get paid. You can play every day or whatever you want. At least start just $1. So head over to FanDuel.com, and we'll get to that in just a minute. Also, CLNS Radio, the CLNS Beat podcast series, and Audible are giving you a free audiobook from the world's largest online library. Audible.com is a leading provider of audiobooks with more than 180,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, periodicals, and, of course, sports. Simply go to audiblepodcast.com/Celtics to claim your free audiobook. Once again, you are listening to the CLNS Radio Celtics postgame show. I'm Jess Thomas alongside Mike Munger. We're breaking down this huge 111-78 Celtics win over the hapless Washington Wizards, which we just covered how poorly they really played in this game. So let's jump a little bit over here to the Celtics side after we've talked a little bit about the struggles of the Wizards. Now, I think the first guy we should talk about, there's a lot we should talk about, but the first guy we should talk about tonight is Jared Sullinger. He had 18 points and 15 rebounds in just 23 minutes. Didn't even play the fourth quarter. He was dominant. He had 6 offensive rebounds, which was 6 of the 19 the Celtics had in this game, and the 19 they had in the game was a season high in terms of offensive rebounds. The team also had a season high in second chance points with 8.5 minutes left in the game. So I believe they got a few more later in the game, but the season high already with almost a quarter left, total dominant performance. So tell me, because I like to ask everybody about this, Mike. Throughout the offseason, people were giving Sullinger trouble about his weight and was he losing enough weight and all that. And I wanted to give him a chance. I said he's on the hot seat, but this is his chance. Will he play well? Well, so far this season, he's played absolutely fantastic. He's been very consistent. He's had a lot of good games. And tonight, getting 18 points and 15 rebounds in 23 minutes and making a huge impact on the floor. I want your thoughts on what you expected from him, what he's done, and if he can sustain it.
Well, the good thing that the Celtics have going for him right now is this is a contract year for Jared Sullinger. So, you know, no matter what, he's going to go out there and play hard because either he wants to get paid by the Celtics or he wants to get paid by somebody else. So we're only going to benefit from Jared Sullinger going out and playing like this on a nightly basis. Do I think he's going to be dominant every night? No. I mean, you're gonna have that night where you go up against somebody that's just a little bit too big, a little bit too long or athletic, and he's not going to be able to do this. However, you're not going to see it that often. I don't think that – I think it's similar to that transformation you saw with Al Jefferson the last year that he was here, where he struggled a little bit early, but then something clicked, and then he ended up becoming a legitimate double-double machine to the point where he was a wanted commodity that we were able to flip to get Kevin Garnett. I think that Jared Sullinger is ahead of where Al Jefferson is, so I think that he's going to be able to sustain a pretty steady pace throughout the year. I mean, if Jared Sullinger by the end of the year is averaging about 15 and 10, that wouldn't shock me one bit. I think he has the skills and the potential to be about an 18 and 11, 18 and 12, but I just think with the way that Brad's rotation plays out most of the time, especially later in games, if we're killing somebody, he lets some of the other guys get some minutes. I think that you're more than likely to see Jared Sullinger finish the season somewhere around 15 and 10, 16 and 10, something like that. But I like it. I just think he's got this nastiness to him. I think he has an edge about him. I think that he's one of those guys that fits in well with this team. He fits in well with the fan base. When he's on, he's definitely on. And it's just something different about him. And again, money motivates everybody. But I think that maybe he just got sick and tired of the media questioning his drive and his want to be good. So, and I guess it doesn't hurt the fact that he's a coach's son is yeah, dad coaching growing up, so you're probably hearing a little bit of that from Papa Bear. But I like what I'm seeing from Jared Sullinger. I thought he was great tonight. I thought that he was easily the best player in the game overall for us, and just making the effort plays. He was good on defense, good on offense. Phenomenal rebounding the ball. I mean, to get 6 offensive rebounds against with Marcin Gortat, who's actually a pretty good big man, pretty solid big man in the NBA. Kind of guy that usually gives Sully trouble. I thought that Sullinger did very well, and I was very proud with the effort.
Yeah, I agree. He's heard a lot from the media, like you were saying. He's constantly getting beat down. You're too fat. You're not good enough. You're not quick enough. And I think he has good influences around him, like you said, with his dad being a coach and being pretty hard on him, making sure he's playing the game the right way. And I still feel like fans like him overall. They might get tired of the weight stuff, but that's their own problem. He works hard. He does his best, and I think he's a really good player. And yeah, he has his inconsistencies, but he's always been a solid rebounder. He gets in the right places. He has good hands. He really plays the game right. And if he can give you added offense, but 15 plus points, he's averaging like 10 or 11 points right now. if he can give you just a couple more baskets a game, do something like he did tonight, he's an extremely valuable player, and he's really fun to watch when he's playing like this. I absolutely love rooting for him when he's playing like a house on fire like this. It's really enjoyable, so I'm happy about that. And he always gives the effort, which you got to appreciate as a fan, obviously. I'll give you some stats from this game. There are a lot of good stats. Once again, you guys can call in at 347-215-7771. We would love to hear your guys' thoughts on this route, this fantastic game that the Celtics played tonight. The team had 6 guys in double figures, 21 for Isaiah Thomas, 18 for Jared Sullinger, 17 for Jay Crowder, 16 for Avery Bradley, and 12 each for Kelly Olynyk and David Lee. So big-time scoring there. I mean, obviously they scored, 111 points. So you're going to have a lot of guys, but a lot of solid performers there. 43% shooting from the whole team. Some good outings. Sullinger was 8 for 12. Bradley was 6 for 12. Crowder was 4 for 8. Bradley was 9 for 21. A couple more misses. Thomas was 9 for 21. Bradley was 6 for 12. But Thomas always takes a lot of shots, so no surprise there. Off the bench, Kelly Olynyk was 4 for 7. David Lee was 5 for 7. A lot of good shooting percentages from some guys. 58 rebounds for the Celtics. As I said, the 19 offensive rebounds of the season high. 58-46 rebounding edge for the Celtics. 15 for Sullinger, 7 for Jerebko, 6 for Lee, 8 for Johnson, and missed him, and then 5 for Crowder. A lot of good rebounding. Celtics assisted the Wizards 28-16 as well. 22 turnovers for the Wizards is really, 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 really bad. So a lot of good effective play there. Steals, 11 steals for the Celtics. And they held the Wizards to 32% shooting from the field. That's 27 for 84. Gortat was 1 for 8. Otto Porter was 3 for 8. Chris Humphries was 0 for 5. Wall, as I said, was only 4 for 11. Kelly Oubre Jr., 0 for 7 off the bench. Gary Neal, 2 for 7. A lot of really bad shooting from the Wizards. And one of their biggest problems was their starters. Porter had 6 points, Humphries had 0, and Gortat had 4. Not going to get a whole lot done with 3 of your starters getting 10 points combined. So a lot of problems for the Wizards, a lot of great things from the Celtics here. So I like to see that. One thing I really noticed from tonight, I want to hear your thoughts on this, Mike. Jonas Jerebko played 24 and a half minutes, which is a pretty hefty chunk. He usually plays less than that. He only shot 1 for 7, 4.7 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 turnovers, 2 steals, and a block. Yeah, I've been noticing a lot this season. Jerebko is having a really hard time shooting the ball. He's had several poor shooting games and just doesn't seem to be in the flow of the offense. I know he does good things in terms of just hustle plays and rebounds, being in the right place. But when you have a guy like Tyler Zeller, who is either not playing or playing in garbage time, playing 3 to 5 minutes a game, would you rather see Zeller get more time and have Jerebko on the bench more because of his shooting struggles? Or do you think Jerebko just makes the team better by being on the floor? Because it's been a thought of mine for a while with Zeller just really falling completely off the map for seemingly no reason, I guess just because they have more big guys than they can play. But I want to hear your thoughts on Jerebko and Zeller.
Well, it's tough because I like Jerebko. I think that he's one of those small ball stretch fours that when we decide to go smaller, you can have him out in the floor with Sullinger and Crowder, with Kelly Olynyk. You can match him up with pretty much anybody in the front court. And if he's on, then he looks great out there. But like you said, he's not shot the ball all that well this season so far. And it's to the point where, sure, you like the energy plays, but tonight's one of those nights where I would have liked seeing R.J. Hunter a lot more. I'm wondering if maybe they're trying to give Jonas a few minutes to see if he can kind of catch fire, hit that one shot that kind of gets him going into his rhythm, because they know that R.J. Hunter has that capability. So I'm wondering if maybe that's what it is. I mean, with regards to Zeller, he started off the season as a starter and it didn't work out for us. So yeah, I just think that Zeller is what he is. He's a very solid backup guy. He's going to run, he's going to compete, he's going to hustle. He's a good offensive big man. You don't get too much defense out of him, but he's going to go out there and do his job. He doesn't try to do anything he's not supposed to. He's one of those good up-tempo big men where if you need somebody that's going to run the floor and kind of make the other big man on the other team work, he's the guy you put out there. He's not going to make too many mistakes. You know, he can knock down the 15, 18 mid-range. He's solid is what he is, but I don't know. I mean, I get what you're saying, but at the same time, I'm just wondering if maybe they're just trying to give Jonas a chance to get his rhythm back, try to get his groove back, maybe hoping to get something for him down the line. You know, maybe you could see if he could be one of those guys used with one of the Brooklyn picks in a trade to get somebody else in here. I don't know.
Yeah, I like what you said about them getting an extra look at him, because looking at Jerebko's minutes here, you know, in the past games, before tonight, 8 minutes, 14 and a half, 18, 19, 4.5, 14. So tonight was the most minutes with 24.5 that he's had for a lot. I think this is probably his most for the season. And, you know, he hasn't been effective offensively, like we're saying, a lot of missed shots, barely scoring, you know, 4 points, no points, 2, 2, 1, 0, 6, not a whole lot of offense. So the question is it worth his good play, his hustle, and his rebounding to get virtually no offense at this point, when you have someone like Zeller who can get offense, or someone like Hunter who is a little smaller but gets some more time, shuffle the rotation around. There's plenty of big guys to clog up the five that you need in the court. So I think you might be onto something with saying that giving him an extra little long look tonight to see if he is a guy that should be on this team in the future, or if he's just not quite worth it with his skill set at this point. So that brings me to a couple other big guys, Amir Johnson and Kelly Olynyk. You know, Johnson came in here to be a veteran presence, to be a solid player. He's been getting the starts, but really he just hasn't been very effective, and he's been kind of quiet. He hadn't played a whole ton of minutes, especially for a starter, and he's just not putting up the numbers that I expected him to. I thought he was going to be a solid scorer and get a boatload of rebounds, and he really hasn't done much so far. And then Olynyk also hasn't gotten a ton of minutes. He's done well with his minutes. He had 4 threes tonight, which is impressive in 20 minutes. But he also hasn't been a whole lot of a factor. I know it's because Sullinger's playing so well, and that changes a lot of things because people weren't sure what they're going to get out of him. But I just want to hear what you think about Johnson's season so far, and is it just an acclimating thing, or is he just not as good as he's supposed to be, and how Olynyk's progressing?
Well, I think when the Celtics are trying to focus on defense on the floor, and trying to prevent the other team from making any kind of run, is when you see Johnson at his best, because I didn't really expect him to do too much scoring when he came in. I knew he had some limited offensive game around the rim, okay jump shot from 10 to 15, but he's the guy that I thought was going to come here and provide a defensive spark, that rim protector that we just haven't had. I mean, God, I don't even remember the last time we really had one, maybe since Perk was here. And even then, that was more of a combination of Perkins and Garnett, combined with whoever it was that was backing him up. So I think Amir's contributions aren't coming out yet, just because it's still early. But I could actually see him growing more into his role as the season progresses, because the guys like Sullinger and Lee and Kelly, they're not going to sustain a pace where offensively they're there every night. Your offense comes and goes, but your defense, is one of those things where you should bring it every night. And I think that's where, when you see those stretches where nobody's hitting their shots and you can't play small ball and spread the floor and, open up the middle, you're going to have Amir Johnson out there. You're going to have him out there with a team with a legitimate 4 or 5 that can play down low. I think that's when he's going to shine the most. And I think that come playoff time, it's actually going to be huge, because the game slows down a lot more. And I think Amir Johnson, I think later on in the season is when you're going to see his game come out of him, I guess you could say, for lack of better words. I mean, I didn't have high expectations for him offensively, but defensively, the guy, he's never in a bad position. I mean, outside of maybe once or twice when he just kind of loses his way when he's trying to switch on a pick, or when he leaves the wide open shooter outside. Other than that, I mean, I like what I've seen from him on the defensive end of the floor. So, I'm willing to wait a little bit on Amir Johnson. Again, good veteran presence, like you said, but I'm willing to give him a little more time, because I know what I expect out of him, that we will see it eventually.
Yeah, I'm willing to give him time too. Yeah, it's, you don't want to jump in too quickly. It's only 16 games into the season, and it's, you know, especially a guy who's new to the team, you don't want to just immediately come to assumptions. I guess I just thought he was going to be better offensively, but I know he's been in the league for a while. He's a little bit older, and you're working into a new system, playing some defense. Makes sense if his offense isn't totally there, so I get that, but we'll see what he can do in the future here. I want to get into, because as we said earlier, big win for the Celtics tonight after beating Philadelphia on Wednesday, right at the end in a close game. Before that, the Celtics were really struggling for a couple games here because they got blown out by the Hawks on Tuesday. They looked real bad. They lost by 24 points. Brad Stevens, 25 points. Brad Stevens was not having it. They lost to the Nets the game before that in the second game of a home-and-home. The Nets won by 10. So they're struggling a little bit, and those were games where Marcus Smart wasn't playing because Smart is out for at least 2 weeks, and it looks like probably a lot more with a knee injury. And it's the difference shows in the defense, at least it did for the first couple of games without Smart in the lineup. And you know, at this point in his second year, he's gotten injured numerous times, you know, with the ankle injury last year, toe injury this season, now the knee injury. He's getting a lot of injuries pretty quick here with his hard style of play. Is Smart injury prone, or is he going to get over this? And because if you're relying on a guy so heavily to be one of the leaders in the team, you can't have him getting injured like every other week.
I think he's going to figure it out. I remember, you know, another guy that played with a lot of energy and kind of swagger about him that we used to have, Delonte West. He was a guy that people thought was injury prone just because of his style of play, how he was always going full speed, didn't know how to slow down. He would just go out and play ball all the time. I think Smart is built better for the long term than what Delonte was for that style of play. I think eventually he's going to figure it out when to go 110%, you know, 110 miles an hour, when to slow it back to 50. I don't necessarily think he's injury prone more than he's just unlucky because I think if you go out there and you do the right thing, you just land funny, that's just bad luck. I mean, you know, any kind of ligament thing, any time where it's a non-contact injury, that's just bad luck. Yeah, I don't necessarily think it has anything to do with him being injury prone. I think that he will figure it out. Like you said, those first two games where he wasn't there, it was a problem. I think it was a little bit of an adjustment for them to figure out how to play without Marcus because his defensive intensity wasn't there, so other guys had to step up. And while Marcus isn't a dominant offensive player yet, he was solid enough on that end of the floor where you had other teams had to kind of watch for him because if he got on the roll, he could have those games like he did when he played against Westbrook, you know, and he lit them up for 20-plus points. So I think it'll be good for him to sit down and watch and just see how things are done. I think Avery Bradley was kind of like that early in his career, and now he kind of figured it out. I think if Marcus can sit down and watch, learn when to go, when not to go, I think he'll figure it out. And it'll be a good thing for him in the long run. And, you know, when he comes back, I mean, having a well-rested Marcus Smart in the middle of the season pushing on to the end isn't a bad thing. And I think that Brad Stevens will be able to monitor everything that's going on, keep him and the rest of the guys fresh and healthy when that end of the season comes around so that we are ready to get into the playoffs.
Yeah, that's a good point, having rested and healthy players midway through the season. Obviously, something that will help the team, and if he can stay healthy, that will continue to benefit him. I believe we have a call here. I'm not 100% sure if they want to be on the air. We'll get to him in a minute. The FanDuel call line, toll-free, 347-215-7771. Brought to you by FanDuel.com, the best place to play one-day fantasy basketball. Pick a team of 9 players with just players from that night's game. Get the payouts in your account the next morning. Play every day or whenever you want. League start at $1, and it can finally pay to be a fan. It isn't just for huge tournaments. You can play against your friends any night. Just create a private league and let the trash talk begin. Join the over 2 million other fans who have already won money playing on FanDuel.com. So, for right now, for a special offer, you can enter a FanDuel league. And if you don't win, FanDuel will refund your money. Any contest you want, up to $10, just make a deposit, choose your league. And if you don't win, you'll get that money right back in your FanDuel account. The only way to get this exclusive no-lose offer is to go to FanDuel.com, click the microphone, and use the promo code Celtics. That's promo code Celtics. FanDuel.com, where every day is a new season. That's FanDuel, fandel.com, FANDUEL.com. Make sure you go ahead and sign up today. So we're going to head over to this caller here, area code 941. You're live.
Yes, Nick Sesento down in Tampa.
How you doing, Nick?
Pretty good. Nice win tonight again over a relatively decent quality team. I thought they'd be better going into the season than they were, or that they've turned out to be, speaking of the Wizards. But, I mean, like was mentioned earlier, it just seems that the Celtics team just has their number. And when I watch the Wizards team play, I just kind of get the impression of a team that just really doesn't have an identity. I think last season they made their playoff run and they had, you know, they overachieved. And I think most of that identity came from, you know, Paul Pierce. He had been there before. He was really trying to make a run. That team has talent. I mean, you know, Otto Porter, I mean, Bradley Beal, John Wall. I mean, I've always liked Marcin Gortat. I've always thought he was, you know, a solid center. I know his game has kind of declined. Nene's game has declined a whole lot. But, I mean, they have solid talent on their team, but just not enough, just no character, no heart, no real depth. I think the Celtics can field, you know, I mean, it's outside those, you know, the Wizards starting lineup. I think, you know, there's not much there. And if you put the, you know, the Celtics, you know, starting lineup against the Wizards, or, you know, the Celtics second unit against the Wizards second unit, I think the depth of talent is, you know, the disparity between the depth of talent is obvious, that the Celtics just have that much more talent. But, some of the downsides, I mean, there's not much to take away from a game like this where the team is led for the entire game and there's, you know, like not really much deviation between quarters and between, you know, play. It was basically just domination from end to end. One of the trends that I really don't like is Jonas Jerebko. I mean, this guy is killing us out there. If this was a closer game, if this wasn't a game where it was fully in control and fully in, you know, the Celtics had complete control, Jonas Jerebko would be killing us. I mean, this is the third or fourth game, I think, at one point when he made his one basket, his 1-for-7 tonight. I think it was Mike Gorman made the comment on the broadcast that was his first basket in his previous 18 attempts, that he was 1-for-18 at that point. I mean, that's incredible, and I think it's, you know, a symptom of a larger problem with the front court. Love what I saw from Sully, great stuff, and I think David Lee, you know, had a pretty productive game in his limited minutes. You guys mentioned Amir Johnson. I mean, he seems to get, you know, the rebounds that we expected to get out of him, but I really think that people expected more points out of him, and I think that he just seems lost in the offense, and I don't know what it is. He's just throwing up. I mean, he's just throwing like just ugly shots. He's running into the defense, you know, men just standing right there, arms straight up. He's just running into him, jumping, and not really seeming to know what he's going to do with the ball. I don't know. Hopefully he comes along. I didn't know that, you know, Brad Stevens' offense was, you know, that complicated, because Brad Stevens seems to put, you know, players that have not exceeded in other places and put them in positions to succeed here. So I don't know, maybe Amir Johnson just takes a little extra time. The final point, and since Sully is obviously the big, you know, the big issue tonight, the big guy tonight, 18 points and 15 rebounds, not able to reach that contract extension after his fourth year of his rookie contract, the fourth year option. What does anybody think he's going to command on the open market? Because when the salary cap for this season is $70 million, but going into next season is when the big, you know, salary cap bonanza takes place, where the jump goes from $70 million to $108 million salary cap. What do we think that, you know, Sully is going to command on the open market in terms of his contract? How much per year do we think he's going to make? What do you think Ainge would be willing to offer him? How important is he to the Celtics in terms of money?
Yeah, I mean, tough to know from Sullinger. I mean, I'm not great with the numbers things, but I think, you know, I think he'll get a decent chunk. I mean, it's tough to know because of his inconsistency, but he is young and he is a good player, so I think he could be definitely making something good. Mike, what do you think about his salary?
Well, Sully's one of those guys where he's proven that he can play in the league, but he's still young enough where not only are you paying for what he's done for you now, but you're also paying for what you think you can get out of him going down the road. Again, I mean, right now you're looking at a guy who is probably a 16-11 guy. He fits Brad's system. He's very coachable under Brad Stevens. So it all depends on, I mean, you're going to have to choose. Unfortunately, it's one of those things where, you know, we all fall in love with the players that we have. But what Danny Ainge is going to have to do is he's going to have to make a tough choice of who does he want to keep around, who does he think that you can keep around here for when we, you know, either do get lucky in the draft and get the next big superstar coming out of college, or if we can get lucky in free agency or a trade, who are going to be the guys around here that you can put on a team moving forward to contribute to a championship? I mean, I like Sullinger. I don't think he's a max contract guy, but like Nick said, the contracts are about to get outrageous in these next couple of years. I think you can afford to overpay Sully a little bit as long as it's not anything completely stupid, because we're going to have plenty of cap space. Both Jarebko and Amir Johnson's contracts are non-guaranteed after the first year, so they can come off the books and it's not going to hurt you. So I think you can give Sully a pretty decent chunk of change. I mean, depending on what the CBA is, how many years you can give, you're not going to give him a max deal. But maybe, I don't know, 5 years, $60 million kind of thing. You know, hopefully he'd be willing to accept it. You know, maybe take some kind of hometown discount to stay here, because he has a place in Boston. He has a home in Boston. Fans love him in Boston. Coaching staff loves him in Boston. Teammates love him in Boston. So it all depends on what really matters to him. I mean, maybe it could be one of those things where we get lucky and we make another move first to upgrade the overall talent on the team, bring in that top-flight superstar. Maybe Sullinger's willing to stay. You know, I don't know. It just we'll see. It is a good point that Nick brings up, though. I think 5 years, $60 million, you know, maybe, you know, 5 years, $65 million, something along those lines of that $12 to $14 million range. Is what you're probably going to have to pay for Sullinger to keep him around. I mean, you'd like to think you can get him for cheaper, but in today's NBA, with the cap getting ready to expand and just with the way the NBA is today, somebody's going to offer him a butt ton of money. Somebody out there is going to do it. I mean, I'd be willing to take the chance that he's going to continue to improve for us.
Nick, what do you think about the contract situation with him?
That's it. I was just laughing at the butt ton of money comment. No, I was listening to the discussion about the max contract, and I was actually, as I was watching the game, I was you know, on the Facebook, and I was talking about it, and I said, why didn't Danny Ainge lock this guy down? And somebody responded immediately. His agent wanted a max contract, and it was never in the discussion to extend him because he wants a max contract. So I said, well, how much is a max contract? And under the current salary cap of $70 million for this season, that max contract would be, for a player under 6 years, is 25%, $9 million or 25%, whichever is greater, which means that would have been $17.5 million for Jared Sullinger. So if there was a time to overpay him, that would have been it, because if we wait until this upcoming season when the salary cap jumps the insane $38 million extra dollars from $70 million to $108 million, the max contract will be $27 million, which obviously nobody's going to pay Jared Sullinger $27 million. But the whole scale then shifts to, you know, is $17.5 million, as, you know, ludicrous as it sounded, you know, at the beginning of this season for Jared Sullinger, will it really be that ludicrous when we finish the season and we get into the off season this coming season? I don't know. $17.5 million, you know, sounds ridiculous now, but I think somebody's probably going to offer him that or something, you know, similar to that, because there'll be some team with money, and if he ends up playing somewhere close to, you know, 70 games, if he doesn't miss that many games, if he can prove that, you know, that he can hold his weight and still not have it affect him, if he can play 70 games plus the playoffs, I think people are going to jump on Jared Sullinger and say, hey, this guy, you know, double-double guy, he got, you know, magnet hands, they're soft, he puts, you know, leads, I think he's one of the top, you know, in the league in offensive rebounds. Someone's going to throw some big money at him, and I think the decision, as with any, you know, good gamble, was not what happens next, it was what happened before, is the foresight, and it remains to be seen, I think, you know, whether, you know, that throwing the money at Jared Sullinger should have happened, or whether Ainge was right to hold his cards. We'll find out. Maybe Jared Sullinger is that, you know, guy that came out of the draft, the superstar that we're looking for. He's just taken a couple of years to develop, because how many double-double guys are there out there in the league right now, really? I mean, there's not that many of them, so, you know, it remains to be seen. We love him in Boston, like to see him, you know, take that discount, but, you know, we'll see what happens.
Absolutely. Nick, thanks so much for your call. A lot of great thoughts on the game tonight, and appreciate your call as always. You always help the show run smoothly here, so thanks so much. Have a good one.
Appreciate it.
All right. Good stuff there. A lot of interesting points. I definitely like what he said about the Wizards just not being interested. It kind of reminded me of the Rockets when the Celtics blew the Rockets out. They just didn't seem to give any kind of care about anything at that point, and the Wizards didn't really seem to care a whole lot tonight either. Actually, I want to bring the Rockets back in here. The Rockets have already lost to the Nets this year to give the Nets their first win, and the Rockets were going against the winless Philadelphia 76ers tonight, and boy, it was that close. The Rockets beat the Sixers 116-114. The Sixers have now lost 17 games to start the season. They're 0-17, and they've lost 27 straight games dating back to last season. James Harden dropped 50 for the Rockets tonight in a very typical James Harden game, 14 for 28 from the field, 16 for 20 from the free throw line, 9 rebounds, 8 assists, 9 turnovers. And on the other side from Philadelphia, Robert Covington had a whale of a game, 28 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, 8 steals, probably, if I had to guess. Most of those off Harden, considering he had 9 turnovers. So something we were watching before the night here is see if the Sixers get their first win, but they fall again to 0-17, just barely falling to the 50 points of James Harden and the Houston Rockets. Thoughts, Mike?
Well, I think Houston quit on their coach. I don't have any respect for the Rockets right now. I mean, look, James Harden's a very good offensive player, but I think that, to a certain extent, I just think he's overrated. The guy can't play a lick of defense. Great shooter. He whines too much. You know, I think that he'd be a solid player no matter what, but he's one of those guys who's a product of the new NBA where everything has to be about offense. Everything has to be about, you know, getting buckets. So I don't have a lot of respect for the Rockets or James Harden right now with the way that they, you know, they treated Kevin McHale. And it's a good point that you make about how they seem disinterested. Teams like that with that superstar that everybody, you know, that sells the jerseys at the NBA market, that, you know, they love to see go out and do their thing every night. When they come up against a team like the Celtics who are just scrappy and play hard and love to play defense and aren't intimidated by you and your big name, they don't like that. They're willing to back down. You see it quickly. If they don't get going early, they're willing to back down. I think that's why, you know, it looks like we've had an easier time with teams like that, where we were able to pretty much have our way with Westbrook, where Marcus Smart outplayed and pretty much punked Westbrook. You know, Avery Bradley punked Westbrook. They punked Harden. You know, you look at it tonight, like Avery Bradley went out there and punked Bradley Beal and John Wall. But then you look at a team like the Hawks, who are similar to the Celtics in that they don't have like any real top flight superstars. They play good solid basketball because of their coach and the way he learned. You know, teams like that are the ones that we struggle with. I think it's a pretty funny way that it works out that the Rockets are struggling right now, the Wizards are struggling right now, and they just can't beat us. They're intimidated by us for whatever reason. Their star players just can't get it going right now. They're good against teams that walk in the building. It's like the Mike Tyson effect. He already had to fight one 99% of the time before he got into the ring because the other guy was scared. That's kind of what it is when you go up against the Harden, LeBron, Westbrook. Not with the Celtics. So I just think that the Celtics team comes out knowing that they can beat anybody on any given night. And we've seen it against, you know, the Wizards tonight, the Rockets, Oklahoma City. Who was it? It's fun. It's fun to watch this team go out there and play, and I'm glad that Houston's struggling right now. Screw Houston.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm not a huge fan of what they're doing, and you make a really good point. Really, the Celtics do a great job of shutting down the Stars, and they have more trouble with the more balanced teams. So it's definitely something to think about. I guess maybe keep bringing in these teams with the Stars, because that's who they win again. So close game there. Philadelphia, that's just in with their 27th straight loss. It is. They just set a record for the longest losing streak in major U.S. pro sports, and they are one game away from tying the 2009-10 New Jersey Nets for the worst start in NBA history at 0-18. So two things to look out there for in Philly's next game. So be interested to see what happens there. I just got word that there will be no locker room report tonight. So I want to remind everyone again to check out the Garden Report, which is after most home games, pretty much every game except tonight. It's the Garden Report is CLNS Radio's high definition locker room interview, HD post game show, and it's shot on the parquet floor at the Garden. It's the best of audio and visual coverage. Go to www.youtube.com/CLNS Radio. And the sponsor for the locker room report is the Grandstand app, which is sports highlights from fans in the stands on the new sports app, Grandstand. You can share your own Celtics highlights and watch other fans' videos straight from the crowd. Download Grandstand on the App Store or at grandstand.me. So we'll wrap up here in a couple of minutes. I want to look ahead a little bit here after we've exhausted this game here. The Celtics now, with their 9-7 record, go out on the road for a nice five-game trip. They head to Orlando on Sunday for a tilt against the Magic, and they play the next day against Miami on Monday. And then they go to Mexico City on Thursday to play the Sacramento Kings at 10 o'clock start. They come back and play the San Antonio Spurs on December 5th, and then they finish off the road trip on Monday, December 7th, against the New Orleans Pelicans. Then they'll finally come home to play the Bulls on the 9th. So, five-game trip. Not too bad in terms of games. The Magic are pretty average. The Kings are pretty average. The Pelicans are not playing well. The Heat and the Spurs are doing well. That game in Mexico City, kind of in the middle here. So what do you see the Celtics kind of doing here over this five-game trip? Do you see it going well, having a little trouble with all the road games and traveling all the way to Mexico City? What do you think that they're going to do for this trip?
Well, I mean, no Marcus Smart's going to make it tough because he'd have been nice to have against Miami, you know, to add another defensive presence there, you know, for when, you know, Favorite Bradley's on. You can't have him guard Wade the whole game, so it would have been nice to have Smart down there with him. But I don't know. I'm going to say – I don't want to say, you know, I don't want to come across as the normal homer that I've always been. You know, I want to try to sound a little unbiased here, but you know, looking at it, if the Celtics play their game, I think they handle the Magic. I think they can beat Miami. It's all going to come down to, I think it's going to come down to whether or not the bigs can shut down Chris Bosh and not let, you know, for some reason, the ESPN's new Bill Russell, you know, Hassan Whiteside, you know, go nuts with a block party. I think it'll be more competitive against Sacramento than some people are willing to admit, just because, you know, the Rondo factor, he's going to come out to play. He's going to want to prove a point. DeMarcus Cousins, the guy that most Celtics fans want to see in green, I think he's going to come out there kind of angry and ready to go. He's that kind of big guy that the Celtics could absolutely get destroyed by. I wouldn't be shocked if that's a more competitive game and Sacramento stole it. The Spurs are the Spurs. I mean, you pretty much just hope that they have an off night from the three-point line, and you don't. And I think that we absolutely destroy the Pelicans. Outside of Anthony Davis, they don't have anybody on that team that scares me. I'm not worried one bit by Eric Gordon. Put on him defensively is pretty much going to shut him down unless it's Isaiah Thomas. So I say, you know, at least 3-2, at best 4-1. I just think that it is possible for us to have one of those slip-up games. So I'd say, you know, we beat Orlando and Miami, come away with a squeaker against the Kings, probably lose to San Antonio, and absolutely destroy New Orleans before we get to come back home and face the Bulls.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, the Celtics have actually been a pretty good road team so far to this point. They're 3-3 on the road, which is, you know, most teams are under 500 in the road at the end of the season. So I think they play pretty well on the road and limited chances. But the teams they have in this road trip, you know, with the Magic, Kings, Pelicans, you know, the Heat are a pretty young team that could go either way. I think it's a good matchups for the road if you have to play a long road trip, especially without someone like Smart, like you said. So I think it's a good road trip, and I could totally see them going 3-2 and possibly even 4-1. You know, something could mess up. They could get a little lazy and maybe finish 2-3. I could also see that, but I think 3-2 is a solid clip that they could go. I would look forward to that, and I'm definitely interested in that Heat game with now that they have Bosch back and that, and of course the Mexico City game. That'll be interesting, to just going to a different place like that and not doing your typical home road game. It's considered a road game, even though it's not in Sacramento. But so that'll be fun. We'll see where they stand after that. If they can go 4-1, then they'll be 13-8. 3-2 would be 12-9. Both those pretty solid. Good first month for the Celtics. I mean, they had a tough schedule. People didn't know how they would do, and they really have done fairly well so far. They've had their ups and downs. They've had inconsistencies definitely throughout, and they've had to get knocked around a little bit by Brad Stevens. But I think overall they're doing pretty well. Want to remind everyone, our friends over at TickIQ, T-I-Q-I-Q, released a fantastic rewards-based mobile ticket buying app. I've used it. They have the cheapest tickets for all Boston sports. And with their mobile app, you can save up to 10% more on tickets to any live event. You can set price alerts to be notified when tickets within your price range become available, as well as see all the top deals for the games at the Garden. Now make sure you head over to the Apple App Store, download the TickIQ app, and start saving today. That is T-I-Q-I-Q. Use the promo code BOSTON for 10% off your first purchase. Now, before we get out of here on this shortened show, Mike, any last thoughts on the team in general, any specific players or the game tonight?
Look, it's always better for me to do these things after a win. I'm a lot more calm, a lot more subdued. I don't have to referees as much, although the couple technical fouls that we got I thought were pretty ridiculous. You know, there's no reason for the, like Tommy said, for the refs to have rabbit ears when Isaiah Thomas is complaining. Just let it go.
But you know what?
Impressive win. Again, just seeing Avery Bradley continue to improve. I mean, we already knew he was an elite, top flight level defender, but to see him continue to improve on the offensive end of the floor, it's a beautiful thing to watch. He's such a great basketball player. He's the kind of guy where, if we are able to get that contender, he's the guy that you want to keep around, because he's going to be a perfect contributing piece, that secondary, tertiary piece to a championship team, where he's going to go out there. He's going to do his job. He's not going to overstep his bounds at all. You can trust him on both ends of the floor. I like seeing the continued maturation of Avery Bradley. Moving forward, I just want them to stay healthy. I want Marcus Smart to come back. I want him to be okay. I want to see R.J. Hunter continue to improve. I like seeing him out there. The kid's confident. He's kind of got a nice little swagger about him, and I think you need that as a rookie. I want to see Isaiah Thomas just continue to be aggressive. Don't get down on yourself just because a few shots don't go in, because, you know, if you're the leading scorer, you don't ever want to see that guy lose his confidence. You just want to see him kind of maintain that rhythm. And just see the bigs keep doing their jobs. I mean, it doesn't have to be one guy every single night. It could be a different guy every night. But, you know, see Kelly Olynyk shoot the ball and not do the stupid pump fake that he does. See Sullinger continue to rebound the ball at the clip that he is. See the guys, Jarebko, David Lee, come in and just contribute. Don't lose the lead, or don't go backwards when you come in. Just either maintain, keep things close, or use your ability, use your skills as a second unit to kind of move ahead. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. Again, I think that, you know, it's going to be an interesting next few weeks. We got a lot of winnable games on the schedule. And it wouldn't, you know, I want to see us going into the All-Star break. I know it's a little bit ways ahead, but I want to see you finish the year strong and heading that All-Star break somewhere near the division lead. I think we're the best team in the division. And I just want to see us continue to play good basketball, grow as a unit. And then, you know, depending on what Danny Ainge wants to do, kind of hold tight going into the playoffs with this unit that we have, just let them continue to progress together, make a trade, bring someone in, or, you know, who knows? I mean, either way, it is going to be a lot more fun to watch. It's good being able to watch a Celtic team that go out there and competes every night, plays hard every single night, and just plays with a lot of energy on both sides of the ball.
You got it. That's what you got to see. Just watch them meld together, play as a unit. I'd be cool with that too. I mean, you got some good ball players. Love what you said about Bradley. He's also my favorite player on the team. Has been for a number of years now. He's a great ball player. His offense is really coming to form. He's playing very consistently this year, really stepping up in a leadership role. So I'd love to continue to see that happen. I'm with you on that one. Yeah, just hopefully everyone can continue. And what I loved from tonight was just that they got a lead early and kept the lead. They kept pushing it. They kept extending the lead, and that's what you got to do. And they had trouble with that, like we talked about right from the top of the show. So it's really good to see them really bring it together and keep extending that lead and not blowing it in any way, shape, or form. That was really good to see. So we'll see what they do here. They're 9-7, 111-78 win for the Celtics. They drop the Wizards to 6-7, holding to 32% shooting while shooting 43% of their own. All good here from the Garden tonight as they head out on the road for 5 games. Once again, this is the CLNS Radio Celtics postgame show. You can call in to feature shows at 347-215-7771. Mike, for our first show together, it was a lot of fun. It was a pleasant show. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, man. It's always much more fun to do these after a win. You know, it's almost easier. It's almost a cop-out for us to do them after a win, but great show. Pleasure working with you, and I look forward to doing it again in the future. And I guess it wouldn't be me if I didn't at least do this one more time, seeing as I haven't gotten a chance to do it for a while. But I don't care that he's retired. David Stern still hates the Celtics, and the refs still suck. So go Celtics.
I'm with you on that. That works for me. All righty. This has been the Celtics postgame show on CLNS Radio. He's Mike Munger. I am Jess Thomas. I hope you all have a very pleasant evening and had a great Thanksgiving. Good night.